Welcome to the Spotlight Edition of the Future of Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Wright. Join me as I have conversations with fascinating medical experts as we discuss a variety of compelling topics. We aim to not only inform you, but to empower you, instilling confidence along your journey toward optimal health. This podcast is brought to you by Brentwood MD. Located just south of Nashville, Tennessee, Brentwood MD provides best-in-class concierge primary care. To learn more about our innovative approach to primary care, visit our website at brentwoodmd.com. On this Spotlight Edition, Dr. Tiffany Watson, known to many as Dr. Tiff, joins me to discuss performance nutrition. She's an expert with over 25 years of experience helping high-achieving individuals optimize their health, energy, and body composition. She holds a PhD in health and human performance and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist, fitness nutrition specialist, as well as an intuitive eating counselor. Dr. Tiff is the nutrition director with Empower Physical Therapy here in Nashville, Tennessee. She works with clients both in person as well as virtually all over the country to develop a science-backed and a sustainable strategy toward improved personal performance. We hope you enjoy. Dr. Tiff, thanks for joining me on these podcasts. And I'm really excited to conclude our conversation here talking about some key impacts on one's metabolism. And then, as you know, as we were just talking, I'm really excited to get into some fact versus fiction thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
With some popular But as we get into kind of thinking of one's comprehensive health involving things more than just their nutrition and fitness, how does one sleep impact your strategies with them as you're talking about building a good fuel for their body? How do you talk to them about their sleep?
So important and so under-recognized. I think sleep and stress both can drastically impact how our body absorbs nutrients, how it recovers, how it faces the next day and wants to go work out and wants to make good nutritional choices, right? If you're depleted and you're struggling to get up in the morning, you're chasing it with caffeine, you're chasing it with sugar, you're trying to find the energy that you didn't get from the sleep a lot of times, and then you don't have the extra energy to go work out.
Yeah.
It's a snowball effect. Then you play the shame guilt game, which affects mental health and stress. So sleep becomes that foundational piece that really feeds so many of those other decisions that we make for the rest of the day. Devices, having a pre-bedtime routine, getting off the phones, getting off the laptops, getting off the work.
Yeah.
In enough time to let the body down regulate. And of course, thinking of the timing of what you're eating before bed is important. That can disrupt sleep. Caffeine intake late in the day can disrupt sleep. Yeah. Alcohol intake can disrupt sleep. So not just how well we're sleeping, but the things that we might be doing unknowingly that are affecting our sleep.
Yes.
Yeah. And how we can change our rhythms and our choices and our pre-bed routines to help ourselves get the most out of that time too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love those two thoughts there. And one thing that comes to mind is when you're thinking about that stage we talked about in our last episode, it's like, you know, if you fuel your body with energy, whether it's from proteins, fats, or carbs, or artificial sources before bedtime, you know, it's like, well, you're fueling your body to rest and recover. And there's a way to do that. There's a way to do that well. And sometimes we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot when we eat late or eat our biggest meal of the day there at the end of the day. And then we don't have a lot of activity after. It's a great, great reminder to think about the big picture of your day's routine.
And with the light now, you know, this time of year, you've got light till 7:30-ish at night. Having just a little 10-minute walk after dinner is such a nice way to just kind of help the digestion and just get a little bit of movement, downregulate things, get a little vitamin D. You know, so just creating some strategies to help support that.
Absolutely. And I love how, you know, even though today our conversation's focused on the fuel and the sweat, stress relief is a piece of that. You know, sleep is a piece of that. And I love how you focused this episode and last on stress and really making sure we do work there to calm the cortisol and calm that overdrive as really an aspect that can unlock
our nutrition and our fitness to be even more impactful because there's not that to overcome.
And just inflammation. You know, stress creates inflammation. So then a lot of people are dealing with, you know, joint pain, musculoskeletal issues, nagging injuries. Often that's just an indicator that we're maybe underfueling or overtraining, overstressing the system and not giving it what it needs to repair and recover and thrive on the other side of that. So just being aware, listening to your body and noticing if things are talking to you.
Yeah.
Make sure you're paying attention. Mm-hmm. Those could be nutrition or fitness tweaks that might make a difference. Hydration. Yeah. Also, you know, so.
Love that. The next thing I want to ask about is gut health. And there's a lot of talk in medicine about the microbiome of the gut. And I think truly we're probably just in the first chapters of that story, so much unknown. But does that come up in your work with your clients of how their digestive system works in terms of how they should approach their nutritional plans?
A lot more than it did 10 years ago. I mean, like you said, there's been more awareness around it. There's more research. There's more supplements and things that are kind of promoting healthy gut. Our gut is where all the nutrition is absorbed. So if it's not functioning accurately, appropriately, effectively, it's not absorbing the nutrition that you're giving it the way that it needs to for you to get the most benefit out of it.
Yeah.
It's really the main conversation I have. I'm not a big supplement pusher. I don't use a lot of, you know, prebiotics and these things unless somebody has some kind of indicator like an IBS or some kind of gastrointestinal disruption. But I do see the need to focus on quality, focus on fiber intake. Most people are not getting enough fiber. Now they're trying to get fiber from everywhere. And I think people are getting too much fiber.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so it's the pendulum has swung. Just like with protein, we weren't getting enough. Now people are eating way too much. People aren't getting enough fiber. Now I think people are eating way too much because they're putting it in everything. And then they're doing the psyllium husk and the Metamucil and the greens and the, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then people I think are getting more GI disruption from too much fiber.
Yep.
So just being reasonable about it.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I think culturally we have that tendency to overcorrect.
Yeah.
You know, you just let it swing and it's like, whoa, you missed the mark, you know?
And getting it from quality places, you know, the quality of the fiber.
Yep.
Natural whole food dietary fiber, not manufactured in low carb products that are trying to put so much fiber to drive the net carbs down, right? Which is total carbs minus fiber.
Yep.
So the more fiber a company can infuse, the less net carbs they can report on the product. So then, but where's the fiber coming from?
Yeah.
And that's the bloating. That's the irritation in the gut that we're seeing.
Got it. Got it. Well, I know last episode we talked a bit about hormonal changes in midlife. So as far as how somebody should approach their plan, if they may already be on some hormone optimization, hormone replacement therapy in that time, does that shift your talks with them about how they should approach their diet? Like, for instance, really ladies or gentlemen, one, if their testosterone is supplemented and maybe on the higher side of normal and optimal level for their age, how does that approach, how do you approach that from a nutrition planning standpoint?
Sure. It only supports, in my experience. There's never been a situation where that would change how I might give somebody a nutritional recommendation or protocol, because that's only going to help our goals. If all their hormones are now optimized, then we're probably going to see better success from implementing the nutrition strategies and the training.
Yeah.
Certainly, I need to know, and I like to know if somebody is doing that or if dosages change or they're not seeing, you know, the increases that they want to see on the medical side of things. But it wouldn't necessarily change how much protein or carb or fat or calories I gave someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and for somebody maybe who isn't on hormones, but they're wanting to optimize their diet to support their hormones. How do you think about that in terms of guiding them to make decisions? And we may want to separate it into kind of gentleman's thought and ladies' thought, if you have any.
The quality is the piece there to me, is focusing on the nutrition coming from the right sources that are going to naturally support how your body produces and absorbs and optimizes what you're giving it. instead of just trying to hit numbers and calories and macros and get protein in, but getting it from low quality sources. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, our body knows what to do when we give it what it needs. Yeah. So just trying to give it the right things at the right times and the right amounts are going to support our body's natural rhythms.
Mm-hmm. Like that.
You know.
Good thought. All right. Well, let's transition to what I've been looking forward to, fact or fiction.
Yes.
Kind of thoughts. And some of these may be truly fact or fiction, and I don't even know. So let's talk about intermittent fasting. You know, okay. That's one, that's a theme that I feel like kind of rides in waves culturally, where it'll be something people latch onto at times and others. How should we think about intermittent fasting, maybe scientifically, but then how do you recommend that to be implemented if you do at any point of someone's health plan?
Intermittent fasting is just another way of restricting calorie intake. It's time restricted eating versus restricting calories or restricting carbs or restricting fat. All of those are just an attempt to get you in a calorie deficit if your goal is to lose body fat or weight. People misunderstand that it's the fasting itself that causes the progress. It's the fact that you're eating less hours of the day, thus you're probably consuming less calories.
Yeah.
Because if somebody follows intermittent fasting protocol and overeats their calorie needs in their feeding window, they won't lose weight. Mm-hmm. I've seen people say that a lot. Hey, I lost like 5 pounds initially. Now I'm doing this fasting, but I'm not losing any weight because they're eating too many calories in their 6 or 8 hour window. Mm-hmm. You still have to know how many calories your body needs, how much carbohydrate, fat, protein it needs, and stay within that range in your feeding window if you want to lose body fat.
Gotcha.
I do have some people claim it helps just with their mental focus. They feel more clarity. They feel more energized if they don't eat until noon. If you're seeing those benefits and it's working for you and you're not losing muscle mass and your workouts are still high quality, I don't have a problem with the fasting. Mm-hmm. I just like people to understand it's not the fasting that's making this successful. It's that you are maintaining a calorie deficit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're eating less hours of the day.
Yeah.
The other warning I will give is if people are focusing on building and maintaining muscle and they want to try fasting, you need to make sure you're not fasting during your training.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Tell me more.
Right. Let's say you work out first thing in the morning, you're coming off a fast from the evening before. So you have had nothing from dinner. Then you train at 7 a.m. and then you're not eating till noon. You have no nutrition to offset breakdown, to help with recovery, to fuel that workout, to refill glycogen. So just be very strategic about when you're working out and how that's positioned around your fasting.
Okay.
Because we don't want to create breakdown with nothing to offset it, especially when we're already struggling in those, you know, 40 to 60 year old age brackets to build and maintain muscle. We don't want to do anything to offset that again.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to one of my next factor fictions, which was fasted cardio is the best fat burning strategy. Mm. True or false?
Myth.
Yeah.
The research is very clear that when calories are controlled for and consistency and volume of cardio are controlled for, fasted or fed are equally as beneficial. Okay. There's no significant difference. The way we lose fat is to, again, be in a calorie deficit over time. Mm-hmm. And this is another myth. Because you're burning fat during a workout doesn't mean you're losing body fat. Mm-hmm. Burning fat as a substrate, meaning you're using fat as fuel for that workout. But that doesn't always equate to body fat loss. Mm-hmm. That's just the fuel source that you're utilizing for low intensity zone 2 or fasted cardio.
Yeah.
But it's over time in months and weeks that you're losing body fat by consistently being in a calorie deficit.
Yeah. It's a good reminder.
So people are thinking, oh, I'm burning fat during this fasted cardio. You are, but that doesn't mean you're going to lose more body fat doing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just do what feels better. Some people like to train fasted. It's motivating. It sets their day. There's nothing wrong with either one. Now, I will say if you're training first thing in the morning and you're training fasted, the recovery meal is much more important, mm-hmm. right? Because you have nothing in the tank. Again, same argument I was making with the intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Right. If you're getting up, training fasted, you need to make sure you're eating after that workout within an hour or so to just offset breakdown.
Okay.
But if you're doing it in the afternoon, it's going to be kind of like if you're doing a workout in the afternoon, you probably already had a meal or two in your system, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be as important to get that post-workout meal in because you already have food in the system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
When I was curious, adjacent to that topic, as far as timing when someone eats versus when they work out, maybe either cardio or strength training, is there a certain window of time that someone should eat a healthy pre-meal to give them energy as far as the time it takes for digestion and getting into their system to be at kind of at maximum use of that meal?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're eating, right? If you're eating a more refined, what I'd call quick burning carb, like fruit, dried fruit, white bread, something a little bit more processed and refined, you could eat that 30 minutes before and it would be broken down and accessible as energy. Mm. Right. So that's that quick pregame.
Yeah.
Right. If you're wanting to have more of a whole food, larger meal, 3 to 4 hours, because those complex carbs take longer for our body to break down and digest and actually release that usable energy. So just not necessarily the timing, but understanding, what am I eating? Is this going to even be available by the time I train?
Yeah.
You know, so just understanding that the types of food that you choose break down differently and release energy differently.
Yeah.
So for my elite athletes, my youth athletes, we talk about pregame meals or these short windows on tournament weekends, you know, where you're doing like an applesauce, or you're doing goldfish, or you're doing pretzels, or you're doing fruit snacks, because they're breaking down super quick and you don't have a lot of time to digest.
Got it.
Yeah.
Great. Well, and actually adjacent to that too. So I have individuals who love their creatine and their pre-workout shakes or meals. Is that essential to build muscle in terms of supplementing creatine or having a pre-workout kind of routine? Is that essential, necessary to build good muscle?
Not essential, but certainly the creatine beneficial. Research is very consistent and very valid around the benefits of creatine for muscle maintenance. There's also a cognitive element we're seeing at the 10 gram mark. So 10 grams of creatine a day, we're seeing a good cognitive benefit of the supplement.
Yeah.
So the creatine, now to also clarify, creatine is not a pre-workout energy boost, right? Creatine gets into the system over time, provides better recovery, provides muscle maintenance, provides good benefit over time, but it's not something that's going to give you like a pre-workout boost.
Yeah.
Just to make sure people understand that.
I think that's a great point, because I think many of my members kind of put it with their pre-workout.
Which is fine.
Works. Right?
Not a negative, but it's not like going to be a crucial element to like that pre-workout energy that you're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, if I hear you correctly, it's one of those things that, like, you know, if they work out 4 or 5 days a week, they need to take their creatine 7 days a week.
Correct.
Because it is a long play.
That's
it's
right.
Not just
it's just a daily supplement that's getting into the system, that's building a foundation to help with muscle recovery and to help with progress and muscle mass gains over time.
Yeah.
Good. That's right. But the pre-workout shakes, I mean, to me, whole food is always going to be the better choice.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those have a lot of additives, a ton of caffeine. I get worried about people that maybe already have a pretty elevated heart rate, having excess caffeine pre-workout, a little bit of caffeine, meaning like a cup of coffee's worth, which is about 80 milligrams. But these energy drinks sometimes have 200 milligrams. Mm-hmm. So just being very aware of what you're putting in your body and what the volume is of that. If you feel like you need a little something before, you know, try a banana, try an applesauce, try, you know, something more whole food to give you energy instead of going to the powders and the supplements, in my opinion.
Love it. Love it. Well, I have a lot of individuals who love their protein shakes and their protein powders. Someone who says, you know, I get most of my protein from a shake or from a powder. Is that okay? Is that good? Is it bad? Is it indifferent for someone's health plan with protein?
There's a huge spectrum there. I'm not a fan of the pre-made shakes, mm-hmm. right? The ones off the shelf, no refrigeration needed, mm-hmm. ingredient list that you can't pronounce. That's a low quality, highly processed protein.
Yeah.
So just because it says it has 42 grams of protein in it and you're at the gas station and you drink it, it's still a ton of calories and it's unnecessary and low quality. Mm-hmm. If you do some homework and you find a good quality whey protein powder, or if you're staying away from dairy, like a plant-based protein blend, and you make a shake at home and you can fortify it with fruits and veg and some kind of a milk or milk alternative, and you're getting good nutritional density out of that shake, mm-hmm. in addition to good protein, I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. Those protein powders, if you're thoughtful on the brand, are minimally processed.
Okay.
They're all processed, right? At some level. But they're minimally processed versus the pre-made that have such a long shelf life and, you know, are a lot less nutritionally dense.
Okay.
So that would be my opinion. Have a good protein powder to make some shakes at home to use as a supplement, not a staple. Mm-hmm. But the pre-made shakes, I would be very mindful of overdoing.
Gotcha. Are there any particular sources, even brands, that you can confidently mm-hmm. recommend to sure. our listeners that you've seen maybe through testing or through experience that really do seem to be as good as a non-whole food sure. source of protein could be?
Thorne Labs is one of my go-tos. I've used them for a number of products, but they have a good whey protein powder, Thorne, Thorne. Mm-hmm. And Transparent Labs, which the name would speak to, is very transparent mm-hmm. about their quality, their products, their testing. They make a number of protein powders, different types, plant-based, whey, grass-fed beef, different kinds. So those two would be the go-tos for me on the powders.
Okay. Very good. Next area. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Myth.
Tell me more.
Unless you're training in the morning. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're at 5 a.m. or breakfast is one of the most important because it's your recovery meal.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're training in the afternoon and you just have to like to have a light breakfast in the morning and, you know, go about your day, have a bigger lunch, as long as you're getting your nutritional needs met over the course of the day, there's no one meal that's priority.
Okay.
What I see people struggle with if they don't really eat breakfast is they can't get enough nutrition in their body in two meals.
Yeah.
Right. If we're trying to hit 120 grams of protein in a day and you've got to do that in two meals, that's a lot harder than if you get 25-30 in your breakfast.
Yeah.
So to me, it's not that, oh, this is such an essential meal because it's at 8 in the morning. It's more, we need 3 to 4 meals a day to make sure our body gets what it needs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like that kind of points back to the thought of the fuel and the performance.
Yeah.
You know, what are you fueling your body for? And if you have that early morning workout, you may need a good breakfast to recover from that and it not be during a fasted period. Yeah. Next one. So I'm going to go to the Y and I'm going to do some zone 2 cardio for 30 minutes. I've got to have a sports drink or an electrolyte mix to recover. Fact or fiction?
Meh, fiction. I just think about myself whenever people talk about the electrolytes and everybody carries their water bottles around now with, you know, all these PhD balanced waters. And I think, you know, I somehow survived running out in the hallway, drinking out of the water fountain and PE class and then ran back in and started playing dodgeball again. You know, it's like we didn't have all that stuff. And we played sports and we were out in the 100-degree heat in the middle of summer in Nashville. And, you know, it's a lot of marketing, a lot of marketing. Now, I'm not saying now with people following a lot of more aggressive diets and low carb, which you cut carbs, you cut water, carbohydrate, right? Carbs hydrate us. So if we follow low carbs and we're not getting the hydration, we may need an electrolyte to help supplement. Yeah. If we are eating a lot of salt, like we eat out a lot, we're traveling a lot, there's a lot of sodium in our food, we may not need an electrolyte because we're already getting a lot of sodium. You know, those some of those little packets have 1,000 milligrams of sodium in them.
Yeah.
A lot of people are over supplementing and then they're dehydrating themselves.
Yeah.
We don't need those every day. They're something to replenish when we've had excess loss of fluids.
Yeah.
That could be through sickness. That could be because we work outside and we're in the heat. There's some people that definitely need them. If we have a really grueling long workout and we are somebody that sweats a lot, we may need to supplement. But again, use it as needed and not as a daily. I know a lot of people are waking up putting electrolytes in their water.
Yeah.
I don't know everybody's situation. Some people may need that, but I know I get plenty of salt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I don't see why I would ever need to supplement with electrolytes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking about that one specifically. I feel like where we are currently, there are some brands with electrolyte mixes that have surfaced that have marketed themselves for the masses.
Yeah.
And I've seen it bring more harm than good.
For sure.
But it's right there at the checkout stand where you can just get a little pack and pour it into a bottle.
And it
of water.
Makes you drink more water for some people. They're like, oh, but then I drink more water, but it's offsetting.
Yes.
You know, hydration and sodium electrolyte balance is osmosis, right? It's moving water in and out as needed. And if we have too much salt, our body's going to retain water to balance that out. If we don't have enough salt, it's going to try to, you know, get us more salt by not going to the bathroom. So, you know, all the things. So it's like you got to find your threshold on that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, and I often will get on a little bit of a soapbox sometimes thinking about some of the sports drinks like Gatorade. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind myself, but also the members I work with, you know, Gatorade was, to my knowledge, developed at the University of Florida for their sports teams, you know, hot climate, nearly professional athletes, they might need a certain type of hydration to recover well.
That's right.
But whomever within the Gatorade community decided to market it for a 10-year-old baseball team is brilliant, you know, because they're not going to have that same output, that same sweat.
They're just
getting
the sugar. Now they might need a little of the sugar if they're, you know, playing high levels, but still it is definitely marketing. And I know even the ones that are now, they don't have sugar, you know, they're sugar-free. They're just the electrolytes. But again, 1,000 milligrams of sodium when people are already ingesting a lot with the foods that we eat is a lot of sodium.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do feel like you need it and you wanted to dilute more, you know, if you want to use half the packet and more water, that would be maybe one way to utilize those without having the whole packet at once.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, great thought. Next one. So the best body composition is going to have the lowest body fat. True or false?
False. Our bodies have an optimal zone somewhere they function. And for some people, that may be with a little more body fat. Other people can survive leaner and still see all their systems working well. Mm-hmm. Our body, again, will talk to us. We'll see slowed digestion. We'll see brain fog. We'll see lack of sleep and recovery, nagging injuries. Those are all things that our body is saying, maybe you need to nourish differently or train less or make sure, you know, especially with women, lower body fat, we see loss of menstrual cycle, which means our hormones aren't getting fed. Food feeds all the systems. So being very aware that as you lose weight, as you get leaner, there is a point of diminishing return where systems will start shutting down because the body will prioritize primary function.
Yeah.
Emotions are not primary. Digestion is not primary. Muscle mass is not primary. Bone density is not primary. Your body will start pulling from all of those systems when it's not getting the nutrition that it needs.
That's great. So great point. Great reminder. And as I think back over the list I just gave you, I think I gave you all fiction, all myths. So I should have,
my opinions are all.
I should have thought a little more. I should have thrown you like a, hey, that's actually fact. But maybe next time.
Yeah, that's okay.
So as we kind of land the plane here and wrap up, I wanted to see if you had any recommendations for any useful technology, any useful apps or smart technology that you have found useful in the clients you work with for their performance nutrition planning.
I have used MyFitnessPal for 20 years. So that's my go-to app for food tracking. I'm sure there are others out there that are equally as beneficial, but it's just a very simple platform. They have a free version that does what it needs to do if somebody's not ready to invest in, you know, a paid app. The database is extensive. You can import and add recipes. So that's where I would start if you're just interested in kind of getting a baseline of where you are on the nutrition spectrum. The other devices, I've had clients with the Whoop and the Oura Ring and the Fitbits. They all have their nuances. I don't think any of those devices are 100% accurate. You know, they give us good trends. They give us good baselines. Same with the home body composition scales.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with using them, but just understand that there's about a 3 to 5% error rate on those things. So if you step on one day and your muscle mass shot up 2 pounds from the day before, like just take that with a grain of salt. Like you probably didn't gain 2 pounds of muscle. They're very hydration sensitive. So just looking and using them as with long-term trends, the same with the sleep patterns and the heart rate recovery. Yeah. I don't want people to get so tied to those numbers that then they, you know, get so emotional about, oh gosh, I didn't sleep well today. Now my whole day is ruined. Yeah. But do you feel okay? You know, like just because this number says, like, do you feel like you can face the day?
Yeah.
Like that's really what you're going for, right?
Yeah.
So just they're great new innovations. I just don't want them to overwhelm people and then to miss the real point is just to make healthy changes.
No, I think that's a great point. I see data, especially as we can find data much more accessible and individual, it can really be overwhelming. And that can be really useful in certain situations. But I do feel like probably the balance is a little bit on the detrimental side, where it can get people preoccupied with certain areas that may not be the highest yield for them.
Agreed.
Just because they see a negative result or a bad number.
I see that with the continuous glucose monitors as well, where people see certain foods spike their blood sugar levels and then they want to stop eating those foods because the banana or the sweet potato or whatever spiked it. And that's not the goal of the monitor, is to never see a spike. It's how quickly do you recover? How often are they happening? What time are they happening? Is it in the middle of the night and waking you up? Is it, you know, so just looking again, use it as data and curiosity and not then start judging or attaching to this food that spiked the blood sugar. Did you eat it by itself? Maybe you should have the banana with some nuts and some Greek yogurt. Because the fat and the protein will balance the blood sugar spike. So just understanding how to utilize those foods as well. So those, that's the other device I feel like people are kind of getting a little bit in the weeds with.
It's a great thought. And I think, you know, a great point to make, because a lot of what we talked about can get rather complicated and it can seem almost overwhelming to think, well, how am I ever going to start? There's so many things to consider. But I do want to encourage the listeners to recognize that sometimes this is like a crash course that they can do, whether it's with the details of their current diet, or as they make changes with macro counting or calorie counting or fitness tracking or continuous glucose monitors. You know, it might seem overwhelming, but it's finite, you know, and it's information that you can get and take with you forever. You know, I think about our education, you know, there's classes that I haven't taken since college that I still tap into today, but it's technically a crash course I took maybe as a freshman in college, but it was hard when you took it. And I still draw from that well. And if we think of it almost like, hey, I'm going to take a crash course in my performance nutrition. I'm going to really dive deep and see where's my starting point. Where do I want to go? It's not going to be forever. I love that thought. And I'd love to, as we wrap up, think about that intuitive eating thought and that intuition that we kind of graduate to. I think in our last episode, you mentioned kind of you want to graduate to
that. Right.
I loved that thought because it's not a place you necessarily start.
No.
You finish there. Tell me more about that mentality of intuitive eating that you implement and how doing a crash course can lead to that graduation.
Sure. that's, we talked about the MyFitnessPal. Nobody wants to feel like they have to measure and weigh and track and record everything they eat forever. But again, unless you do that for a short period of time and you learn and you build awareness and you start to recognize that has fat in it, that's a carbohydrate source. Oh gosh, I didn't have any protein at breakfast. Those patterns and cadences and information allows you to make changes. And yeah. Then once you start to implement and you start to build strategies, the goal is then can we wean off of the tracking and the numbers and the collection of data? Because now you know what a plate looks like.
Yeah.
You know what a portion is. You know when you go out to a restaurant that they gave you two times the amount of rice you would have eaten at home, mm-hmm. or a huge baked potato that might feed four people or whatever, yeah. you know? So it's just, you can't unsee once you start to build those visual cues. Mm. Then when you're traveling, when you're on vacation, when you're at a friend's house for dinner, you can be much more intuitive yeah. about this is an appropriate portion for me. And then sometimes you're just really love a dish and you eat too much of it. And that's okay too. Yeah. But you do it consciously.
Yes. You make
you
that
know
decision.
I'm having yep. seconds of mom's lasagna.
Yeah.
But you're not surprised that it was more than you needed.
Yeah.
Right.
So. I love that thought. So well. As we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share with me and our listeners kind of how individuals who have heard this and feel sure. like what you are saying resonates with them and they really want to do some hard work, but with a teammate. How can our listeners connect with you and what does that kind of process look like?
Love that. Thank you. So my website is workwithdrtiff.com. There's a way to schedule a free strategy call on there. I truly feel like this is a relationship. I always want to give people an opportunity to just jump on a call with me before they invest, before they commit, before they do anything long term.
Yeah.
Just, hey, let's talk. What are your goals? Is this a good fit? Do we jive? You know, do yeah. you think you can handle this? So there's an opportunity to do that on the website. Instagram is at workwithdrtiff, mm-hmm. same thing, D-R-T-I-F-F. I'm pretty active on there. So good content if you want to just kind of hear a little bit more about my philosophies and things. So those are really the two best ways to kind of get to know and connect, my website or Instagram. And then I'm here in Nashville, but I work with clients nationwide. So we do virtual coaching if you're not here in Nashville. So if anybody's not local or is listening or has family somewhere else, then that's an option too. Oh,
that's perfect. Well, yeah. I know you've worked with members of our practice before and we've seen great results. And I encourage anyone who just feels like, hey, I'm tired of trying to do this on my own and trying to figure it out through my own research, to really consider bringing you on as a teammate, because the work you do on some of the foundations of health just flourish into big futures. And that's amazing. So thanks
appreciate
for the work
it.
You do.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing what relationships come from this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Well, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you for listening to this conversation. I truly hope you found it useful. You can find out more about today's episode and discover additional resources at BrentwoodMD.com. Be sure to check out all of our other content that we've created by searching BrentwoodMD on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. If our content has provided you with value, it would mean the world to us if you subscribed to the show and left a review. This helps us ensure that more people, just like you, can find our content so that they can begin optimizing their health. To learn more about our concierge services that we provide to our members, visit BrentwoodMD.com. We'd love to meet you. This podcast was for general information only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or giving of medical advice, as no doctor-patient relationship has been formed. The content of this podcast is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should seek the advice of their own trusted medical professional.